You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Hey, you want that to go?
Yeah, we got some takeouts on news stories we're following, and it turns out it's really more like a warning about Chinese takeout, because as it turns out, according to the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, we're consuming way more salt than we need to. It's not good for us. And salt is really sneaky, John. You don't realize you're eating as much salt as you are. You think you're eating salt when you're eating pretzels, but meatloaf at Denny's has 5,000 milligrams of salt. We're supposed to have, 2,300 milligrams a day.
Denny's, though.
Macaroni Grill, which is like the saltiest restaurant around. Their grilled chicken portobello, 7,300 milligrams of salt. Marion Nestle joins us now. She's a professor of nutrition at New York University and author of What to Eat. We're kind of making light of it, but actually what we're learning is that salt is really not good for you, right, Marion?
It's not. It raises the risk for blood pressure, and the real difficulty with it is just what you said. It's in food before the food ever gets to you. So something like 80% of the salt in American diets is already in the food. It's in processed foods or restaurant foods. It's not what you add at the table that's the problem.
It's in foods like that we don't assume that it's in. It's in sweet foods. It's in cookies and sweet cereals that we don't realize are as salty as they are.
Yeah, it makes food taste better. That's why it's there. And the food companies say people don't like it if food isn't really salty.
All right. So what is the FDA's plan to get us to cut back on our salt intake?
Well, the FDA has actually denied that it has such a plan, which I think is kind of interesting. But the Institute of Medicine is coming out with a report today that is advising the government to start regulating salt. And the idea is to lower the salt intake across the entire food supply so that everybody will get used to eating a little bit less of it and food won't be so salty. I think it's a really good idea.
Well, didn't we at some point recently have food that was less salt? Hasn't salt increasing in our prepared foods at an incredible level?
Well, it has, and the reason for that is that once people get used to a salty taste, then it takes more salt to make food taste as salty as it used to taste.
It's like heroin. Great. That's good.
Something like that. I mean, the more you have, the more you want.
Wait, and what?
Excuse me?
I'm sorry. I'm just surprised by his comparison to heroin.
Oh, it's a little extreme.
Yeah, but Marion, they actually proposed things like this in the UK by the Food Standards Agency in 2003. They implemented them. Is it working there? Are people okay?
It is working there, and companies across the board have been trying to cut down on the salt, and they're doing it very gradually, so nobody notices.
They don't notice.
They don't notice. No, if you do it gradually, nobody notices. And so eventually they'll get it down to some reasonable level and it'll be healthier for everyone.
Well, maybe they'll trick us into having less salt, which means less heart disease and hypertension, at least according to the FDA.
They're tricking us into having more.
Okay, Marion Nestle, she's a professor of nutrition at New York University, author of What to Eat.
What do they say on Monty Python? I love salt. I'm having salt,
that's
and
spam.
Salt.
Oh, right. That's
sorry.
Spam.
Joining us now, Nate Persily, Charles Beekman, professor of law and political science at Columbia University, friend of The Takeaway. He's also the author of Public Opinion and Constitutional Controversy. Good morning, Nate.
Good morning.
So we wanted to talk to you about this Supreme Court decision yesterday, 8-1 decision, the High Court invalidating a 1999 federal law banning the interstate sale of videos showing cruelty and torture to animals. Justice John Roberts wrote that the law created a criminal prohibition of alarming breadth. The government's aggressive defense of the law was startling and dangerous. First of all, what's your reaction to the opinion?
I don't think this was much of a surprise. I mean, this law went very broadly and captured things like hunting videos and other depictions on movies and video of animals being killed. And so there was no question of where this was going to go. The fact that it's an 8-1 decision is sort of striking these days, given the division on the court. You know, at the very least, you know, in this period of ideological conflict, we can all rally around the free speech rights of those who are, you know, maiming animals.
I'm trying to understand, though, how they come to this conclusion. What is the logic here? And I'm, of course, reminded of the debate, the First Amendment debate over pornography. It seems to me that there's a different test on community standards for sexual content than there is for animal cruelty. They're not talking about community standards. What's community offensive? What is disgusting or prurient or making these kinds of tests? Why the distinction? And maybe you don't even agree there is a distinction here.
Well, no, I obscenity is really an outlier when it comes to First Amendment law. I mean, if something is obscene, then it doesn't get any First Amendment protection.
Killing rabbits isn't obscene?
No, I mean, not necessarily. I mean, you could do that on a cooking show, right? There are all kinds of depictions of killing and maiming animals which are going to be First Amendment protected. There are very few obscenity prosecutions which fulfill the strict standard the Supreme Court has established. And in this case, they're very concerned about a law that sweeps too broadly. They suggest that you could, if you wanted to, specifically limit a law toward what they call crush videos, these bizarre sort of sexually targeted videos that involve small animals, which was really the intent of Congress in this case. But this law, which could really sweep in all kinds of protected speech, is unconstitutional.
But the court does signal, apparently, in the opinion that a law written more narrowly to establish the parameters for the kinds of videos that you just suggested could actually pass the test.
It might, yeah. It might, because if it really was, in a sense, limited to those kind of obscene animal-related videos, then it would potentially be an exception to the First Amendment.
So is the takeaway here that the court has said, aside from striking down this law, that there probably isn't another domain of speech that's going to get the same treatment as obscenity on First Amendment grounds?
That's right, that there is no categorical exclusion for depictions of animal cruelty, that we're not going to set apart one more exception to the First Amendment.
All right, Nate Persily is the Charles Beekman Professor of Law and Political Science at Columbia University, author of Public Opinion and Constitutional Controversy. Always great to talk to you, Nate.
Thanks so much.
Coming up, Goldman Sachs wants you to know that they would never lie to their clients, but are they twisting the truth? And what about that more than $3 billion quarterly revenue? Whew, New York Times' Louise Story in just a minute.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With 3 updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging and an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.